Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. And if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us what you do for a living and where you live.
Yeah, so my name is Roger Piscina, and I'm the CEO at a drone startup company in Austin, Texas called Eve, like the one who bit the apple, Vehicles Corporation. And in a sense, what we're working on is something called drone as a first responder.
That's cool. So how did you get the idea to start this company?
I wanted to start this company about, this version of the company is like, I want to say like my third or fourth attempt to like try and do this kind of company. I tried it really, really young when I was a freshman in college, and my dad, academic, worked at NASA, worked in the aerospace sector, retired as a UT professor. And during his career, he got a lot of DARPA grants and Air Force grants while working in the private sector. He really wanted to start like one of those companies with his son. So he was like, hey, you're getting your engineering degree. I have my PhD, I'm retired. Like, let's see if we can apply for some of these grants. I was like, okay, sure, Dad, I'll write them. But like, it's just really hard to get grant funding from like a retired professor and an undergraduate student still getting their engineering degree. That was like the first time I tried to start a company like this, like in robotics and drones and high technology and whatnot. But I really wanted to do that. And somewhere along the way, I realized that you kind of need to have like experience in the domain, like in the startup world. I feel, I mean, there are outliers, don't get me wrong. Like sometimes you can just start a company and just be really like the stars align and, you know, timing was really good and you just like knew what, or you felt like you knew what you're doing. But there's a lot of luck involved in this stuff as well. I mean, like most people that build great technology companies, they usually worked at another startup or technology company before they did do it. I mean, hell, even like, excuse me, like even Steve Jobs and Wozniak, they worked at Atari before they actually started Apple. And I mean, Elon worked at a startup too before he did X.com and whatnot and the like. So I felt like I kind of needed a little bit more of that experience. When I moved back to Austin, I was working at a few drone startups. So I grew up here in Austin. Both my parents were graduate students at the University of Texas. My dad got his PhD in high energy physics. My mother got her master's in radio, television, and film. And then we moved away like in 97, like when my dad got a job at Johnson Space Center, and moved around the country. We lived in California for a bit, lived in South Texas and different parts of Texas and whatnot. Eventually I really wanted to come back to Austin. I loved this town so much growing up as a child here. And I made it back in 2017. And like I said, I ended up working at a few drone startups. And then I started my company again, and it's been way more successful after I had a few of those experiences under my belt. But yeah.
Awesome. So can you talk more about what that taught you? Obviously, this time it's much more successful because you have that startup experience. Also, as I always say in our podcast, that we learn the most from our failures. So can you just talk about what you've learned to be able to have a good success here with this company?
Yeah, Dan. So I learned, like, I'm still learning right now. I don't think I know everything. Like,
yeah, 100%.
Yeah, like life is all about just like waking up in the day and like, you know, taking what you think you know, and then just like, you know, adding the knowledge on top of that and whatnot. So I really wanted to build a drone company. About 10 years ago, or no, it was like 11, 12 years ago, like I built my College of Engineering's first working drone. And that was just something that like I saw a drone like in the wild, and I was really intrigued by how it worked. This was really early in what we consider the drone industry. It was a kit drone. And then like I remember when I found out like how it worked, that it was mechanically very simple, and a lot of like the controls and like movement of the vehicle in the air was like pretty much done with PID loops on like like basically like using sensors like an inertial measurement unit, accelerometer, gyroscope, and being able to like measure how the vehicle is basically performing in the air, and being able to provide electricity to these different motors to be able to give it balance or fly forward, back. And but like from a mechanical engineering standpoint, which is what I studied as an undergrad, I'm a mechanical engineer, it's really beautiful, like elegant, super simple like design that was really the complexity was in the software. And I really like that. So I really wanted to build a drone company back then. What was kind of funny is like I didn't even want to build like what we considered a drone company today. I wanted to build a flying car company back then, because I saw the technology and I was like, holy cow, like you could build a flying car with this if you scale it up to a certain size and whatnot. The drone industry kind of took me like by like surprise, in the sense that like when I was working on my drone as a student, DJI still didn't build like drones. Like they hadn't built the Phantom 1, which is kind of considered like the Apple II computer of the drone industry. It's basically, it was the first drone out of the box that you didn't need an engineering degree to be able to get it working. Like legit, like it's a regular consumer product. It was like a Walkman or an iPod. You just plugged it in, anyone could do it. You didn't need to really necessarily understand what was going on there. So when like people started selling drones with GoPros and like these other things, I was a little like, oh yeah, sure, that's gonna be a big thing, wink wink, right? And like it ended up being a really big thing. Like honestly, like the industry just like caught fire. And like so at one point in time, like before I started this company, I actually worked under the founder of DJI North America, who's kind of an icon in the drone industry. His name's Colin Nguyen, and he basically set up DJI's very first office in North America, and it happened to be in Austin, Texas. And this happened like in 2011 or something. Like it was a long time ago. And he launched the DJI Phantom 1 and the Inspire 1 out of Austin. And like before he had joined DJI, he was like employee number 9 or something. Like the company had done something like a few million in revenue the year before. And within a year and a half after Colin had joined DJI and started DJI North America, the company was doing 150 million in revenue. Today, DJI, which is still a private company, it's valued, I think, at like 15 billion in private markets. So like it's such a great company, great technology, great engineering, great products. Like DJI is like a crown jewel in the drone industry. They did everything the right way. But the reason why we were able to start this company, Eve, here in Austin, is because there's a really big market opportunity in public safety right now, and also in defense and with the US federal agencies too. So like there's a lot of regulation taking place right now in the US that's basically making it very difficult for Chinese drone companies to sell products into federal agencies, into state agencies. There's some states like Florida and Arkansas that have already made it illegal for any local government, like whether it's like a police department or a fire department or whatnot, to buy any Chinese drones whatsoever. And for the first 10 years, like they were the Apple of the industry. They're the best product, best price, best experience. Like American drone companies just could not compete. A lot of them went out of business. So like right now, like there's regulation taking place in Congress that is going to eventually do something like a blanket federal ban across the country where no police department will be able to use a Chinese drone. And if you walk into any police department in the country right now, they're all using DJI products. So like, yeah, so big opportunity there. To say that our drones will be as good as DJI like within like a year or two would be kind of a lie. I mean, we do some things better than them, but the whole experience is going to take a little bit like longer for us to really catch up and be as good. Let me put it this way. Like a conversation I had with Colin after I left his he's got a robot consulting firm here in Austin called Gwen Partners. I remember I had a conversation with him about like 13 months ago, and like it was in the building that he works out of right now. So he has a toy water gun company too. It's called Gel Blaster. Super popular. It shoots these little ball gel balls that are made of water. It's Gel Blaster Surge. I think they just launched one called the Piranha. They have the XL version. So that company is growing really quickly. It's actually the fastest growing toy company in America today. Back in summer 2020, me along with another two engineers, Eric Davis and Robert Kovac, we built the first Kickstarter version of that bad boy. And that Kickstarter did like $300,000 or something. So Colin's like a serial entrepreneur. So he's always like working on a bunch of things at once. So he started this toy water gun company during the pandemic. The first models were 3D printed in my house. And they went from like a $300,000 Kickstarter in like July 2020 to last year, they did like 90 million in revenue. You can walk into any Walmart, Target in the country and buy one today. And like, so it's insane. So like Colin is like really with it with like the startup and like, you know, with different things. So he was like really pivotal in the early drone industry. But like I said, he's doing other things like right now in the toy industry. But what he told me that day when I went to visit him at his toy HQ here in Austin, like I was like, look, Colin, like I know DJI is like amazing. I mean, you helped build that company. And but like we really think there's this great opportunity in public safety. And our drone, the Crow, it's gonna make an impact in this industry. And then I was like, the technology doesn't even have to be as good as DJI. It just needs to be like, I don't know, like half as good. And then Colin was like, Roger, it could be like 30% as good and you will still get market share. Like, you know, because like the thing is like, I don't know, like that like he's in an agreement that like a lot of these agencies would much prefer to buy American, like, you know,
100%,
like
100%.
versus buying DJI, which is a Shenzhen company. I mean, they have like Communist Party members on their board of directors. And
Well, I
so like
think
one of
that's
them.
yeah, I guess any company in China, I feel like that's the like the trade-off, right? Is that they have, they have to have the government officials sitting on the board and involved with the company. I think,
Yeah.
but when it comes to, I think it's working with U.S. governments, especially now, ever since COVID, I think even more so. People are,
Yeah.
okay, I don't want to work with Chinese companies, and that's just for whatever reason. That's kind of the trend all across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And basically a lot like what happened with Huawei, like the wireless company out of China, or telecommunications company. Like there's just so much data, like security and like risk with having all of these flying robots like flying over America. Who knows what they're sending back to Shenzhen? Maybe they're not sending anything, but like the thing is the risk is too much. Like it's too much. So like yeah, that's one of the reasons why this opportunity is opening up. And there's other companies wanting to build a drone as a first responder here in the US, a lot of good companies, but our solution is somewhat unique, I believe. And we already have a lot of interest with a lot of police departments here in Texas. Like we have letters of intent from here, from Austin, from Houston, from as well as like, you know, like down the road in Bastrop and things like that. So like yeah, we really believe that we're going to be able to have like a really good a really good impact with what we're trying to do here, because it all comes back to like why we entered this market, Dan. And in part it's because like there's a big labor shortage in public safety right now nationwide, like because of the whole defund police movement. And
Right.
and like even just like with like, you know, some budget like cuts and whatnot that took place, don't get me wrong, a lot of the funding is back, but just to give you an example, here in Austin, like Austin Police Academy, like before the pandemic, like before like March 2020, they were getting about 1,000 applicants a month here at Austin PD Police Academy. In December of last year, before we came into the year 2023, they got 40. And I can tell you, of those 40 that applied, like I think only 15 walked across the stage, like, you know, when they graduated. So like right now it's getting worse. And this is just like a microcosm of what's going on nationwide right now. So like in Austin during peak call hours. If you call 911 today, you'll be on hold for 3 to 10 minutes. And
I live in Dallas, and it's the same thing here. I mean, it's not just Austin.
it's like across the nation. Like, shoot, like LA right now, it's like the Wild West over there. They're like robbing trains and stuff. Like, it's ridiculous. It's like for packages or
So I
something.
guess, can you just talk more about your tool? Like, I'm really intrigued because, like, in terms of like public safety, what specifically is it going to be more of like an oversight to just make sure, like, okay, like, things are going good? Or is it more of like, I don't know, do you see the vision for if there's a fight, being able to like, break up a fight or something? It's like, where is really like this tool going to go?
Yeah, so I'll tell you what we're doing here. So like we have our Crow, which is basically it's the drone. And it's an actual acronym. It stands for Quadrotor Reconnaissance on Wings, because 5 versions ago, the very first Crow was actually it won a DoD hackathon. And you know, the Department of Defense, like, they just love their acronyms, so we had to think of something clever. So we came up Crow. We have the nest, the station where the crow lives in the station. So we designed this drone to live in the environment. So think of like in an area like Austin or even like Dallas, where you'll position these nests across an area, and basically the 911 call comes in, the operator gets the address, and immediately within 3 minutes, the drone autonomously takes off from its station and it goes to the destination. And the operator has eyes on scene in basically 180 seconds. And what that means is that operator at dispatch knows what resources to send to these calls. Like, whether it's like, oh, shoot, like we need to send 3 police officers because it looks like XYZ is occurring and we need at least 3 cops to be able to handle that. Or it could be like, oh my God, there's like a 10 car pileup. Like, don't just send one ambulance. We need like 8 ambulances. There's a lot of people that are hurt. Or, oh my God, like, there's a fire in this apartment complex. Like, we need like three fire engines to come in and like put out this fire. And so like that's not really happening right now. So like what
That's
happened? I
awesome.
will walk you through like the dispatch. Like, they picked up the phone, someone is communicating verbally what's going on. They're usually in a stressful situation, so they'll either over communicate or under communicate or even miscommunicate what's going on. And the dispatcher has to make a judgment call. They have to be like, okay, well, I'll send one cop or I'll send one ambulance or whatnot. So like oftentimes, like not the right resources are sent to these 911 calls. And right now, because of this public safety labor shortage, it's taking longer and longer to answer these calls, and like not the right resources are arriving. So like we developed this system to help public safety operate more efficiently, so you can send the right resources to these calls. That not only saves the city money, but it saves lives too, man. Like,
That's
there's gonna be
amazing.
some,
That's amazing. I was just gonna ask, so it's like, okay, so if like for example, right, if you're gonna have these nests, it could make every mile, every 10 miles. And I was like, how fast are these drones moving? So, if I call from and I'm 5 miles away, like how quickly can it arrive? What does that look like?
Well, it depends. Okay, so like right now, like legally speaking, we're flying under 100 miles an hour. And if someone from the FAA asks you, that's what we've been doing, and I swear to God, that's what we've been doing. But the drone potential can fly much faster than that. Like, so like it like we're in the 600 millimeter frame class, which like in drone frames, usually you measure like diagonally motor to motor, and like that distance is basically what your frame class is. So if someone's like, oh, I'm running a 250 frame build, what they're talking about is 250 millimeters from motor to motor diagonally. So ours is in the 600 millimeter frame class. And what that means is it's in the same size as the DJI Inspire 3, which is one of their flagship drone models, and also the M30, which is their like flagship like public safety drone model, the DJI M30. And the thing is, they operate at 24 volts, or what we like to say in the industry, 6S power. We're operating at 48 volts, which is 12S power. So we have a lot more, think of it like 6 cylinders in your car versus 12 cylinders. So we got a lot more horsepower in our baby that allows us to travel pretty quickly if we wanted to. The reason we made that decision was somewhere along the way, we recruited a cop on the team, John Buell, who's our VP of partnerships. And he was an Austin PD. He was on the force for 26 years. And believe it or not, he actually set up their drone program like 10, 11 years ago. So like perfect hire, like great dude. Like he knows all of his like equivalents in Houston PD and LAPD and New York PD. So great way to get into those departments. But yeah, no, John was like, look, this needs to be like a police interceptor drone. So we can't have like some like teenager buying like a DJI whatever on Amazon and then like just schooling us in the air. This has to be high performing. So we developed the drone to be incredibly high performing. It is a police interceptor, if you will. But to answer your question, yes, we can get to scenes very quickly. We're not really deploying a drone like every 5 miles. Like really the operating radius, we like to keep it under like two, because like we kind of want to space out a nest every like mile and a half or so, because we do want to operate in an urban environment, and for that to work, you need to kind of like have them like every so city blocks or whatnot. Yeah.
Do you think in rural America this wouldn't be an effective tool?
It could be. So we actually, our first customer was a ranch owner down in South Texas in Edinburgh. His ranch is like 4,000 acres, which is wow, that's a lot. Like, you know. And so right now, like he's been basically using the drone to like kind of patrol his property and whatnot. So yeah, you could if you really wanted to. I mean, this is like real, like Roger Vision roadmap, whatever, like maybe 2 or 3 years from now. But there could be a way that eventually a drone in Austin could fly all the way to a drone in Houston, like, or like fly all the way to Houston using a Nest network. So like there could be like a Nest like station like every so many miles, so that when the drone is traveling, as the battery goes lower, it lands and it docks, and it does its docking completely autonomous. You don't need a pilot. You just click on it to land in this nest, and the drone is able to do the rest by itself. So like, yeah, like a little bit like the Tesla Supercharger network, there could be a day where there's a crow like drone as a first responder network nationwide, which, you know, a crow drone like from Austin might be sent to Miami or something, which, I mean, I don't know why I would want to do that, but maybe who knows? Like that could happen one day where like, you know, there could be an area of the country that needs more drones, and we just start sending them out of one state into another. But like I said, this is way like we're talking years in the future, but absolutely you could do massive networks, because in a sense, like I know this sounds a little cheesy. I actually told this joke to one of my like I consider him like a mentor advisor, Dr. Metcalf, here in Austin, who he's the inventor of Ethernet technology. So like the local area network that computers, you know, in an area network. Like, so I say that we're building local aerial networks, because like, you know, they're like networks of drones that travel in the air and whatnot. He thought that was kind of funny. I thought it was funny. But
No,
yeah,
I
no,
mean,
so
for
like
sure.
so like we're building lands, Bob, like different kinds though. But yeah, no, so like in a sense, yeah, like it's really like it follows Metcalfe's law. Like how many, like the value of the network improves the more drones and stations there are in the network. So yeah, like in a sense, we're going to start with very small ones. Like the one that we expect to roll out in Bastrop is going to be probably a network of three. It's going to be doing like a neighborhood watch program there. I know Austin, like one person like committed like verbally that they wanted something like a 30 drone alpha network potentially, which we hope to roll out next year. Dallas is on the list as well. So like we really want to establish our presence here in the state of Texas before we decide to do things elsewhere. But we do have interest in other places. At one point in time, we were even contacted by people out of Africa where they wanted to use a drone network to keep rhinos safe, like in nature preserves, because right now there's a lot of poaching of rhinos, and this statistic blew me away. But there's like something like they told us like 5,000 rhinos in the wild, and something like a couple of thousand get poached like every year, and like you just crunch the numbers and you're like, shoot, that means there's going to be no rhinos in the wild by the year like 2030. And they're like, exactly, this is a big problem. So I'm like a little bit passionate about that, because I don't mean to sound like a cheese ball, but you know, one day when I get married, have kids and whatnot, like I want to take my kids to the zoo to see the rhinos, you know, like
That's important.
and you know,
No,
they have to be around.
exactly. I'm just going to ask, as of right now, so are you pre-revenue or do you have current customers that are paying you every month? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, so we have that one customer in South Texas. We have a lot of letters of intent, but we haven't officially rolled out our first network with a police station. In part, we're still getting our beyond visual line of sight waiver from the FAA, along with like completing a few more features on the drone. Like we're still like trying to get our parachute just like working perfectly. So like in case of situations where it needs to deploy, it works every time. We're actually office out of the University of Texas. So like we work out of the JJ Pickle Research Campus, which is in North Austin. And we're partnered with UT through their Center for Electromechanics. So we have a standard research agreement with them that allows us to use some of their facilities and whatnot. And yeah, no, in a sense, like we do a lot of our alpha network testing here on campus. We have our NAS and our drones here and whatnot. But yeah, no, the products, it's come a long way. We actually started working on this full time about a year ago. So
Okay.
me and my co-founder, we like moonlighted this for like about like a year, like 10 months. And then like there was a moment when, and I was still working for Colin at the time. There was a moment when I woke up and I just looked at like the ceiling. And I still remember the day. Like I woke up, Dan, and the time it took for me to shift my body to my left side, I was already thinking of the drone, the crow. And like I really believe that when you're that passionate about something, and like when you can't get something off your mind, like you really need to do it, because like it's like almost like, look, regret can last a lifetime, Dan. Like when you're
True.
60, you're not going to be like, damn, I should have taken that extra, $20,000 Microsoft job or whatnot. You're like, shoot, man, I should have put all my energy in my startup when I really had the energy to do so. And, I didn't have kids and I didn't have like a house mortgage to pay or whatnot, when you can really sink your entire like passion into your dream. And like I told you, I'd been wanting to build this company for like, shoot, like 10, 12 years before I finally got here. And I genuinely believe that when you really want something, and you really want it, it's gonna happen. Like you just have to put in the time and the effort to make it happen. But like, it's not gonna fall on your lap. Like people that are like, oh, I really want this. Like, no one's gonna give you anything in life. Like you really have to work towards it. But if you really, really want it, like if you want to be president of the United States, or if you want like a robot drone company, or you want whatever, like. If you really want it and you work hard towards it, it will happen. It will happen. That's how the universe works. The question is, do you really want it? Like, or are you just saying words? Like, kind of deal.
100%. So I guess just to wrap, what would you say overall is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started this company?
Wow. Well, it's a quote that my co-founder says on his LinkedIn, but like it's like it doesn't count until it hits the bank account. Okay. So like we've had a lot of VCs told us that they're gonna give us money, and they kind of walked away from the table. And me, like, I'm a very genuine, authentic person. When someone tells me something, I believe them. They're like, oh yeah, we're gonna give you $500,000, or we're gonna give you XYZ, like, it's gonna be next month or whatnot. And I would believe them. I'm like, oh wow, this VC is gonna give us money or this or that, like whatnot. Yeah, like I would say that, like, until something actually happens, don't put your eggs in that basket. And that doesn't just
Sure.
have to be with fundraising. It could also be with your customers. Like, just because APD has told us that they're very interested, like you never know what could happen. Like, so like in the sense
100%.
that, like, I mean, we're gonna push hard to get in here, don't get me wrong. Like, and we really believe that the net value add is worth it, because like I said, people's lives will be saved, crime will drop in this city. Like people will get reelected for that stuff. So people will probably fund it. Like, say, hey, under my term, crime dropped 20% here in the city because of XYZ. And I approve that. Like, so I really believe it's definitely going to happen. But like, best piece of advice, until something happens, it hasn't happened yet. So like, be careful not to put all your eggs in that one basket,
Definitely. Well, Roger, I just want to say thank you so much for your time. We're rooting for you. Hopefully, you guys get lots of customers and grow in the next few years, and let's keep in touch.
Yeah, absolutely, Dan. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thanks, Roger.
Take care.
All right. Bye.